from deep inside your radio. Ladies and gentlemen, an hour ago it was warm and sunny. Now it's cool and raining. It must be summertime in London. Yes, one more time from London Town. And the last 2 weeks, of course, have been marked by a drama, a media circus, some would call it. To me, it's all summed up in two quotes. This from 2 weeks ago tonight, just 4 days after Michael Jackson died.
CNN is live on the red carpet at the BET Awards, and so is the father of Michael Jackson. Joe Jackson joins us here tonight. How you doing, sir? How's the family holding up?
I'm great.
He's great. What more do you need to know? He's great. And this week's quote that sums everything up comes at the end of this story. Michael Jackson's family, including his three children, boy, they look white, viewed the singer's body in an open casket at his memorial ceremony. David Fawcett, 50 years old, who attended the ceremony at Forest Lawn, said the singer had looked peaceful at the funeral service. He grew up with Jackson and still lives in Jackson's hometown of Gary, Indiana. And Mr. Fawcett told the New York Post, quote, of the viewing of the open casket, quote, "He looked like himself," unquote. He looked like himself, ladies and gentlemen. That would put everything to all speculation to rest, wouldn't it? And now,
high def, low def, no def, take my hand. It's a digital wonderland. Got to be so careful where you stand in the digital wonderland.
All right, so now WRGB, which I think is in Albany, or in the Albany, New York area, is looking to ease reception problems that came with last month's conversion to digital broadcasting. It's increasing the power of its TV signal and asking permission for another power increase. Let's hope that power doesn't hurt anybody. The FCC last week granted the station emergency permission to boost its signal strength. It is improving reception, but the chief engineer says the station still wants more. Some viewers continue to have problems despite last week's upgrade. One local Albany resident says the station comes in pixelated. That'd be cute. And unwatchable. It's pretty disappointing, says a University at Albany employee. It's not like I'm a big television watcher, but I'm a big fan of CBS. I'm sorry. This is because, of course, the station, WRGB, is one of the several that are on what is called the VHF band, which was largely untested as a carrier for digital broadcasting until the switchover. A fact that was not known to us here in the part of the world that pays attention to all this, until the switchover occurred. Apparently wasn't known to the people who run VHF stations either. Stations nationwide broadcasting on Channel 6 are having the most problems, in part because some converter box and antenna manufacturers seemingly assumed that no station would broadcast that low on the frequency band. So there were assumptions, you see, with all of this. And I guess nobody bothered to check. Dear Harry, still in the digital wonderland, a listener writes, "My parents watch over-the-air TV in Gaithersburg, Maryland, a suburb of Washington, roughly 20 miles from the D.C. line. For 25 years, my parents' TVs not only received every over-the-air D.C. channel, but also CBS and NBC from Baltimore. Upon installing the digital converter boxes in February, my parents' TVs lost both Baltimore channels. Additionally, they aren't able to watch Washington's PBS station unless the sky is cloudless or the TV is moved several feet to the right so it's in front of a window. Even more frustrating, on the June switchover date, my parents' TVs no longer receive Washington's CBS affiliate." This is a conspiracy against CBS. "I'm not sure what happened, as they'd been receiving the channel digitally with no problem since February. Probably moved to a VHF slot. Another annoying side effect of digital, the pictures on some channels is no longer formatted to fit the height-to-width ratio of my parents' TV sets. Thanks for hammering away at this week after week. Signed, Andy." And Daniel writes, I have to admit, you were right. I didn't believe you about the disaster of digital television because I've had one for a year here in Los Angeles and I was getting great pictures, extra channels, the whole Megillah. That's a technical term. Then a couple of weeks ago, they finally made the switch and suddenly two channels vanished. This afternoon, I'm unable to receive another two. I assume it's because it's hot or something. On the plus side, I have now access to 8 Korean language channels and untold Spanish channels, even one in Armenian. Yes, I could pay for cable. I'm taking this as a sign I should simply be watching less television. You know what the recommendation is. Rescan. And don't try to watch anything that's on VHF. Ladies and gentlemen, here in London, it's hard to fathom what we in the United States are experiencing in terms of the slow death of the newspaper business. Maybe because there is no British equivalent to the Drudge Report or the Huffington Post. If you want news, you still go to the websites. If you want news online, you still go to the websites of news media. Isn't that peculiar? But the newspapers here just seem to be flourishing. Fatter than Al Roker ever was. And interesting thing, maybe a clue, I don't know. You know, Saturday in the United States, you know how anorexic the newspapers are? I guess because they assume that nobody reads newspapers on Saturday, or because they just want to, have staff not working on that day, or what? I don't know why. Anyway, you know it's true. You come over here, and the newspapers on Saturday, you think, oh my God, did I sleep for a day? Is it Sunday already? Because the newspapers on Saturday look like Sunday newspapers. And then come Sunday, and they do it all over again, because they have kind of a rivalry inside the same organization between the Saturday and the Sunday newspapers. So, now, I mean, aside from the fact that the main news stories here in the last couple of weeks, the long-running scandal over the expenses of members of parliament was broken by one newspaper, and a big story about a Rupert Murdoch-owned newspaper, now this is hard to believe, wiretapping prominent celebrities and politicians, was broken by another newspaper. It's a newspaper war, an old-fashioned newspaper war. And I don't understand anybody who doesn't take Rupert Murdoch's side. Seriously, because, you know, the mission statement of News Corp is, ethics shall be the first... No, it's not. Anyway, it's bizarre that the newspapers here seem to be flourishing. Fat on Saturday, fat on Sunday, magazines tumbling out of them. And it seems peculiar that an American has to come over here to learn the lesson. You know, when you look at American newspapers, they're slimming down, cutting back, slimming their pages, on the ropes, shutting down in Seattle and Denver, and, giving people less and less every day. And you come over here, an American has to come over here, as I say, to learn the lesson that more is better. Hello, welcome to the show.
You're trying now. I know the era that you'd be flowers keep moving. You know he's never gonna stop moving. Cause he's rolling, he's the rolling stone. When you wake up, it's a new morning. The sun is shining, it's a new morning.
From Leicester Square in central London, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And ladies and gentlemen, it's clean, it's safe, it's too cheap to meter, and it's too expensive to build. Dateline, Ontario, Canada. The Ontario government is suspending its bidding program for a new nuclear power plant because experts say completing the new two-reactor station of the kind Ontario wants would likely cost at least $14 billion. Canadian, but still. And possibly a lot more if there are major cost overruns, which all recent nuclear projects in Ontario have had. Any deal would likely become Ontario's largest single purchase ever, eclipsing the final tab of $13.5 billion on the last nuclear station the province built. That was completed in the early 1990s, projected to cost only $2.5 billion. They're getting sticker shock when they see real prices, says an anti-nuclear activist. There's little argument, says the Toronto Globe and Mail, over the costs of building these types of power-generating stations. They're expensive, and their prices always seem to be going up. So it's too cheap to meter if you don't count the cost of building the reactor in the first place. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an inspector general. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Look what came out this week. A report from five inspectors general. That's the proper way to do it, ladies and gentlemen. Just I'm not bragging or anything. I just happen to know that. Five inspectors general who were mandated by Congress to look into the whole terrorist surveillance program is what President Bush called it. The five inspectors general called it the president's surveillance program, as if they want him to take full credit for it. Isn't that nice? The Bush administration authorized secret surveillance activities that have still not been made public, according to the report, which also questions the legal basis for the unprecedented program. It's unclear how much valuable intelligence was yielded by the program started after the 9/11 attacks. According to the unclassified summary of reports by the five inspectors general, they represented the major departments. Doesn't say here. Anyway, I'll get to that. President Bush authorized other secret activities, intelligence activities, which have yet to become public, even as he was launching the massive warrantless wiretapping program. The report describes the program as unprecedented and raises questions about the legal grounding used for its creation. It says the intelligence agency's continued retention and use of the information collected under the program should be carefully monitored. CIA, FBI, and National Counterterrorism Center analysts said the intelligence gathered by traditional means was often more specific and timely than that gathered by these special programs. Five former Bush administration officials refused to be interviewed by the inspectors general: George Tenet, John Ashcroft, former White House Chief of Staff Andrew Card, former top Cheney aide David Addington. You are out of your lane! And John Yoo. Here's an interesting thing. The IG report said an unnamed White House official inserted a paragraph into the first threat assessment prepared by the CIA after 9/11, which was used, that paragraph was, to justify the extraordinary intelligence measures. Any bets? My money's on Dick Cheney. Or David Addington, since he was simultaneously assistant to Dick Cheney and an assistant to the president. How did that work? You are out of your lane! The paragraph said the individuals, oh, this was the paragraph inserted, said that the individuals and organizations involved in global terrorism possessed the capability and intention to undertake further terrorist attacks within the United States. Seems harmless. The report questions the legal advice used by President Bush to set up the program, pinpointing omissions and questionable legal memos written by John Yoo at the Justice Department. Attention, UC Berkeley. Is he still teaching there? The report suggests you ignored an explicit provision in the FISA law, the Foreign Intelligence Security Act, designed to restrict the government's authority to conduct electronic surveillance during wartime. It said flaws in Yoo's memos later presented a serious impediment to getting the program recertified so it could continue. Mr. Yoo, question? What's legal? It also said extensive secrecy limited the effectiveness of the warrantless intelligence program. For the first month of its existence, the program was running without a Justice Department legal opinion. That would mean, yeah, it was legal. CIA officials complained that much of the data from the warrantless wiretapping program was, quote, vague and out of context. So they turned to other sources. Data from the program would have been better used if analysts understood its full capabilities, the report said. Some officers also said they lacked legal guidance for how they could use information from the program. Well, just call John Yoo. Most of the leads passed on to the FBI didn't have any connection to terrorism. Analysts at the National Counterterrorism Center told the IGs the program was a useful tool, but it was, quote, one tool in the toolbox. One of those little Phillips heads? Several agencies reported, according to the IGs, that while the program produced information of value, they had difficulty defining its precise contribution. You know, it was kind of useful. They went into falsetto, I guess. Yoo's factual discussion of the other intelligence activities was identified by the people who took his job after him as insufficient. Yoo had concluded that the requirement for a warrant didn't apply to the whole surveillance program because of the president's constitutional wartime powers. The report by the Inspector General concluded that Yoo's role as the single Justice Department attorney developing legal opinions was, quote, inappropriate. And U.S. authorities remain unable to provide emergency housing after large-scale catastrophes and must do more to prepare survivors of such disasters for permanent relocation, according to the Department of Homeland Security's Inspector General. Nearly 4 years after Hurricane Katrina destroyed or damaged 300,000 homes on the Gulf Coast and led to billions of dollars of waste, federal Homeland Security officials could face a repeat scenario if another storm struck a major coastal city or a high-magnitude earthquake hit population centers in California or in the Midwest, according to Inspector General Richard Skinner. He says FEMA can manage the response to typical disasters, but FEMA's reliance on costly programs to provide trailers, they just rolled out some low-formaldehyde trailers, ladies and gentlemen. Good work. And mobile homes and the government's inability to swiftly and cheaply repair damaged housing, especially rental units, which have not been repaired yet in New Orleans, mean the agency is not up to handling a Katrina-style event. Lessons learned. We're good. We're man. We learn from our mistakes. News from Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. And now, yes, it takes dedication. It takes hard work. The stories of devotion to a dream. And then there's this. The International Olympic Committee chastised U.S. Olympic officials this week for unilaterally launching their own television network warning the project could jeopardize relations with NBC. Don't tick off Dick Ebersol. The IOC accused the U.S. Olympic Committee of acting hastily by announcing plans for the U.S. Olympic Network, which is scheduled to go on the air next year. We were aware that the USOC had been considering a new Olympic broadcast network, but we've never been presented with a plan. And we assumed we would have an opportunity for discussion, said the IOC in a statement. The IOC is disappointed that the USOC acted unilaterally, and in our view, in haste. The IOC said the venture raises complex legal and contractual issues and could have a negative impact on our relationships with other Olympic broadcasters, including NBC, which paid $2.2 billion for the Vancouver and London Games. The IOC and USOC have had tense relationships in recent years, particularly over the contentious issue of the U.S. Olympic Committee's share of Olympic revenues. Don't tell me it's about money. It's about the Olympic spirit and the thing and the thing. The statement was issued following a conference call between the president of the IOC and Richard Carrion. C-A-R-R-I-O-N, ladies and gentlemen. Richard Carrion, head of the IOC Finance Commission and negotiator of U.S. television rights deals. By the way, speaking of funny names, I know, it's juvenile. But still, the head of the British Armed Services is Lieutenant Colonel Jock Stirrup. If unresolved, the dispute could hang over Chicago's bid for the 2016 Olympics. Uh-oh, Chicago. Look out. The USOC says the Olympic Network is a way to keep Olympic sports in front of viewers outside the period of the Games. Sure, you want to watch luge year-round, don't you? And rhythmic gymnastics with the, you know, ribbons and the things. But a USOC spokesman said the IOC has long been aware of the intentions to start a new network. Of the IOC complaints, he said, to say they caught us by surprise is an understatement. We firmly believe that what we're doing with this network is in the best interest of the Olympic movement. It's a movement. You need one of those. And Dateline London, Britain's Olympic minister, yes, they have one, says the capacity of the main stadium for London's games will be reduced from its 80,000 capacity after the games. This is the white elephant they reported on last week. Calls to reconsider plans to downsize the venue to 25,000 seats had been led by London's mayor. Don't even ask. You think Ray Nagin is a joke. But the Olympic minister says the debate is closed. Says the deputy chairman of the 2012 Olympics, this country does not need another 80,000-seat stadium, which costs a lot of money. Go to Sydney and look at their 90,000-seat stadium that sits there empty. It's gone bust three times. And Chicago says, give me some of that. It's a movement, ladies and gentlemen. And now, the Obama administration is sending conflicting signals as to what to do with the detainees at Guantanamo Bay, how to try them, and most particularly, what to do with them if they are tried and acquitted. Said Pentagon General Counsel Jeb Johnson at a congressional hearing this week, if for some reason a detainee is not convicted for a lengthy prison sentence, then as a matter of legal authority, I think it's our view that we would have the ability to detain that person. This, although the Obama administration has put out a statement saying that they would not use an executive order to mandate indefinite detention. They would go to Congress and try to convince Congress to approve it as well. So what is going on the subject of the Guantanamo detainees and what happens if they actually do go to trial and aren't convicted? We'll look into this matter moments from now here on the show.
On the Firefly platform on sunny Good Street, violent ash smoker, sugar chocolate machine, involved in an eating scene. Smashing into neon lights in their stoneness, smearing their eyes on the crazy cult goddess, listening to sounds of Mingus Mellow. My, they sigh. My, they sigh. La 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 la. In dollhouse rooms with colored lights swinging, strange music boxes sadly drinking the sun, shining all around you. My, they sigh. My, they sigh. La, 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 la. The magician, he sparkles in satin and velvet. You gaze with eyes you've not used yet. I tell you his name is love, love, love. My, they sigh. My, they sigh. La, 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 la. La 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 la.
Welcome back, Mr. President.
Thank you, Rom. Good trip. Good advance work. Give Dave Axelrod a Cuban cigar for finding secure Wi-Fi in Ghana.
As you requested, sir, the Secretary of State flew in for this meeting.
Good morning, Madam Secretary.
Mr. President, might be interested to know I got Rahm's call about this meeting at 3 a.m.
And I'm sure you were prepared to take it.
Yes, I was.
And the Defense Secretary is with us via secure video link.
Yes, Mr. Secretary.
Mr. President, sorry about the video hookup, but the Boeing folks insisted on another day of golf before he left.
No, that's fine. And the Attorney General?
He asked to recuse himself.
Recuse himself?
Mm-hmm.
This isn't a court hearing. You can't recuse yourself from a meeting with the president, can you?
Sir, I'm not a lawyer. Huh? That was his word. Personally, it just sounded like he really didn't want to be here.
Wow. He's in serious CYA mode, isn't he?
From day one. We do have an opinion from the Justice Department on the matter. Unsigned.
Okay. Nobody wants to be our John Yoo.
Apparently.
So, indefinite detention. Where do we stand?
Well, I think it would go without saying if I didn't say it, but I feel constrained to say it anyway. All the goodwill that we've gained internationally from the pledge to close Guantanamo goes right down the Swiffer hole if we authorize indefinite detention of people who've been acquitted.
Well, I have to tell you this, Madam Secretary. Prime Minister Putin took me aside at one point in our, summit in Moscow and said he'd respect us a lot more if we went with indefinite detention. Not that I'm, yearning for Putin's respect at this point. I'm just saying. Gates, what say you, defense?
Well, obviously, Mr. President, it was our general counsel who testified this week that we could continue to hold acquitted persons.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be loath as a non-lawyer to Bigfoot him in this context.
Well, Mr. Secretary, I am a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm still baffled about the legality of how we set up a trial system, or use the one we've got,
mm-hmm.
try like hell to prove that they're guilty. And, if and when they're found not guilty, we continue to hold them anyway. Why hold the trial?
Well, all due respect, Mr. President, mm-hmm. We might succeed in proving them guilty.
So?
Well, that would prove that the system works.
Wouldn't we be better off in the eyes of the world to just say, sorry, these people just can't be tried. Secret evidence, they aren't citizens, they don't have Fifth Amendment rights and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then just detain them indefinitely? I mean, at least that has the advantage of a certain kind of, logical coherence.
You're right. It does. It just sounds like the logical coherence of a dictatorship, doesn't it?
Well, if you look at it that way, it might, yes.
Mr. President, yeah. I've read the unsigned opinion from Justice. I've read the Defense Department counsel's testimony this week before the Senate.
Oh, gold star for doing your homework.
Thank you, sir. It appears to me that we're facing a conflict between our values and our goals.
Mm-hmm. A conflict that I said in the campaign did not have to exist.
Yes, yes, you did, sir. And I'm not saying you were wrong to say so.
Good.
But that was then, and we're here. But, and this is a big but,
mm-hmm.
I think a few of us in this building may have come up with a possible way out of this conundrum.
Mm-hmm. Something that's gone through National Security Council?
Not yet, sir. Mm-hmm. Very preliminary. Lots of unsanded edges on this thing. Mm-hmm. But here's the deal. We can't be sure that we can convict the people we need to convict.
Right.
We can't let them go free.
Right.
We can't continue to detain them indefinitely.
So it would appear. So?
So, if and when they're acquitted,
right,
moments after they're released from custody,
yes,
we kill them.
Sorry, a little trouble on this line. Did you say we kill them?
That's what I said, Mr. Secretary. We kill them.
Ram, I haven't heard you talk this way since you suggested taking Monica Lewinsky's lawyer for a very long car ride.
Haven't had to.
Hold on, folks. 20-second time out here.
Mm-hmm.
We can't do that.
Yes, we can. Well, it's wartime. That's what happens in wartime. You kill people. Kind of an essential part of the war brand.
Mm.
Otherwise, it's just, just chess with bodies.
Or football.
All right. Yeah. It is wartime,
mm-hmm.
Because we've accepted the whole war scenario for this conflict.
Yes, we have.
Because we had to.
Because whatever.
Okay. But killing unarmed people, that's murder, isn't it?
So you release them, you give them a weapon. It's a dangerous world out there, yada, yada. You've electrified the exit door. Zap, zip, zoop, boom, done, finito. Unplug the electricity. And, oh, shoot. Ahmed had a heart attack. That's crappy timing.
Mm-hmm. Starts to look fairly suspicious after the third or fourth time, wouldn't it?
Different methodology, dangerous world. These folks have a lot of enemies, the usual.
Mr. President?
Yes, Mr. Secretary?
I think even though it's wartime, I don't think the uniformed military would want to sign up for this particular assignment.
Mm-hmm.
Not a problem. CIA's on board.
Yeah. You've talked to Panetta about this?
No, not me personally, but they just need a few tweaks in the unsigned opinion from Justice and a signature.
Mm-hmm.
And they're ready to rock and roll.
Mr. President, I seriously doubt Leon Panetta wants to sign his agency up for a program of targeted assassinations at the doors of United States courthouses.
All due respect, I'm not sure Mr. Panetta was a party to this discussion any more than I was.
All right, so just a review. The best we've got right now to solve this problem is to kill any one of these folks who happen to be lucky enough to get acquitted.
Yes, sir. And who knows, even if they started to catch on, it might be an incentive for them to plead guilty.
I have to go. I'm late for tea time.
All right. We'll do this again next week, and maybe we'll have something better on the table.
Maybe.
It's like trying to stand up when you've been hit by a gust of wind. I've spent so many years just hanging around. Now it's time to go back to my hometown. You know, land that is calling. I don't understand it, but I'm on my way. I don't need a reason. Feels like holiday season, and I'm on my way. I got a really bad feeling, my hoofs. It's too hard to sort out, it's too hard to discuss. Well, I've spent so many years just hanging around. Now it's a time to go back to my hometown. You know, a land that is calling. I don't understand it, but I'm on my way. Holiday season, and I'm on my way back to Blighty again. What wouldn't give for a little bit of filthy weather sometimes? What wouldn't give for a late ride in a black cab or a double decker? Got a really bad feeling, man. Trying to stand up, and you've been hit by a gust of wind. Well, so many things I don't really understand. It's like trying to be a woman. It's like trying to be a good man. You know, London is calling. I don't understand it, but I'm on my way.
This is Le Show, and Afghanistan has indeed moved to the front pages now. It's only 2009, which means that because we can only concentrate on one foreign country at a time, if that, Iraq has kind of receded into the background at a strangely poignant moment, because at the last week or two, American troops have been withdrawn from the cities to their bases, to be sequestered at their bases out of town, sort of like San Diego. And there's been a concomitant increase in that same period in the amount of violent incidents, at least in some of the areas in Iraq. So it might be a good occasion to make one of the rare outgoing calls on the Newsmaker line. And after a little bit of research and trouble, we've contacted an old friend of this program who's talked to us many times, Shabshab from Iraq, who is, I believe, currently living just outside the green zone in Baghdad. Is that correct? Hello, Shabshab. Welcome to the show.
Yes, hello, Mr. Sharir. Three questions at once. It's not easy to answer any one of them, but yes, I'm living currently in lovely walled, gated neighborhood, as mm-hmm. it would have been in the old days, mm-hmm. in just outside what would have been the green zone before your troops. I don't know what they did. They left. They're not here.
Well, they it's not an evacuation or a withdrawal. It's a pullback.
Yes, it's a pullback and mm-hmm. it's a pull away.
Well,
it's a pull away, Mr. Scherer.
Okay.
By the way, thank you for paying for this call for the first time in however many years we've been talking.
Yeah.
It's a great relief to me and my son.
Well, your sons.
I don't mean I have real sons.
Oh.
I mean, metaphorically, my progeny, my seed.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
But yes, Mr. Scherer, mm-hmm. things are terrible here. You call it an amazing time.
Thank you.
There are bombs going off left, right, mm-hmm. and I don't know another direction, or I would say it as well.
Okay. So you don't sound happy, Shab, if I'm just, tell me if I'm reading too much into this. You don't sound too happy about the pullback of American troops from the urban areas.
You're not reading too much. You're not reading anything, Mr. Schiller.
Good.
I am not happy. How could I be happy?
Well,
who do you think? You know I sell high-end audio equipment.
Yes.
This is not news to you.
No.
I sell BHK. I sell NHK. I sell everything with three initials in the entire audio universe.
Yes.
Who do you think buys such equipment?
Well,
American officers.
Right.
They are now 20 miles, 30 miles away.
Mm.
They would rather buy, you know, online from Amazon than come see me.
Mm.
What do you think the people that are left here are buying? They're disappointed I don't have stuff from Radio Shack.
They know Radio Shack over there?
Of course they know Radio Shack, Mr. Mm-hmm. Shit here. Right. Please don't toy with me. They're saying to me, why do you not have the off-brand?
Mm.
Why do you not have the Tandy? A man cannot make a living this way, Mr. Scherer. Mm. Of course, I am not pleased.
All right, well, I was more interested, Shab, in a way, in the security environment. You're just outside the green zone.
Yes,
how
sir.
Are things? You said bombs were going off to the left and the right.
Yes, sir.
Is that the way it was in the bad old days? Is it something you can live with?
Mr. Scherer,
mm-hmm.
you say live with it.
Yes.
Please.
What?
Please. Have a shred of sense. I have a high-end listening room.
Uh-huh.
I bring the occasional customer who stumbles into my establishment, into the high-end listening room.
Good. Okay.
I am saying to him, yes, the $4,000 or 5,000 drachma Macintosh preamp
mm-hmm.
is worth the money.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to the quiet passages.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we hear. There are no quiet passages. I cannot sell the high-end preamp, Mr. Scherer.
Uh-huh.
This is not a security environment for selling high-end amplification equipment of any kind.
Okay, Shab. I understand. So from that standpoint, you're not pleased with your government's or your police's or your army's efforts to control the situation.
Mr. Scherer,
mm-hmm.
a man cannot live on $35 Kobe CD players,
mm-hmm.
portable CD players, retail $35.
Yeah, right.
What do you think my margin is on that?
I have no idea. I don't know what your rent would be. Or...
Mr. Scherer,
yeah.
That's a rhetorical question. I wasn't asking you.
Okay.
But who the hell is Kobe in the first place? Do you know them?
No.
Where are they? Can you tell somebody, you feel proud to own a Kobe? Mr. Scherer, please.
Yeah.
But you can tell I'm upset. I'm upset about more than this.
All right, you're sort of opening the door there, Shab. What else are you upset about?
Mr. Scherer,
mm-hmm.
you read the transcripts, I'm sure. I know, from the FBI interviews, interrogations mm-hmm. with Saddam Hussein.
Yes, I discussed some of it last week on this very broadcast. The fact particularly that Saddam had been cagey about his lack of weapons of mass destruction because of his fear of the Iranians.
Yes, Mr. Scherer. You're a regular Al Franken now.
Well,
but, sir,
yes.
Please,
uh-huh.
pay attention to someone else for a change.
All right.
He also says something totally unbelievable, mm-hmm. totally so at odds with whatever, what you know, what I know.
Mm-hmm.
He says, when he's asked about the reports that he had body doubles,
mm-hmm.
you saw what he said.
I saw what he said. He said it was it never happened. It was movie magic.
Yes, sir. And I was one of 30 pieces of movie magic. You remember when we first talked?
Mm-hmm.
I was one of Saddam's body doubles.
Yes.
That was my career, Mr. Scherer.
Yes,
I high-end audio equipment was a sideline with me,
yes,
sir.
Yes, yes.
I made my living being a Saddam body double.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden, as he's about to die, rescued from the spider hole and about to be hung by his enemies,
mm-hmm.
he tells an FBI person, there was no such thing. How does that make me feel, Mr. Schroeder.
Well, it makes you feel like high-end audio is your main source of income.
Sir, you called me.
All right. I guess that would make you feel betrayed and abandoned.
Underappreciated, sir.
All right.
That is what I feel.
Okay.
I go over to supermarkets. I go to funerals. I go to weddings. I go to movie openings, movie closings. Mm-hmm. I go to all sorts of events. When the marsh, where the marsh Arabs live, is drained, who presides over the draining? That was me.
That was you, yeah.
Look at the pictures.
Okay.
How am I supposed to live with this now?
I understand you must feel as though a great part of your past has been sort of wiped away from history.
Yes.
But on the other hand, Shab, that is the past. As we've discussed before, the Saddam Hussein lookalike business has sort of faded away economically anyway.
Mr. Schroeder, that was so last year. Now the violence is starting up again.
Mm-hmm.
The value of having someone come around who looks like Saddam Hussein and just stand in front of someone's house is enormous.
Oh.
In a Sunni neighborhood where Shiites may be planting who knows what, I have been getting offers, inundated with offers. Come, just sit in the garden. It's scary enough to see you sitting there. They think, oh, my God, is he alive? And then they go bomb someplace else.
Why?
But this is a total repudiation of the entire scenario, sir.
Yeah.
Now they think, oh, it's just some schmuck who can't sell his speakers.
Who can't sell his speakers, sure. Wow. Well, I certainly hadn't thought of that, Shab. Well, thank you for shedding this light and this perspective on affairs in current day Iraq, as well as comparing me to Al Franken. That's very rare.
Well, thank you once again, Mr. Schroeder, for paying for their call. And if you have any way of talking to these FBI personnel and say, please, you don't have to publish this now. It's not true.
Mm.
It hurts people.
Yes. Yes.
What are you thinking? Mm. I would be so utterly grateful that I would pay for the next call.
Wow. Well, I will use my FBI connections, Shab, such as they are, and try to do my best. Thanks very much for being on the other end of the Newsmaker call today here on the show. And now, news from outside the bubble. In the same week that Barack Obama went to Africa and said that the Africans have their own future in their own hands, this from the Telegraph in London. Indian farming companies have bought hundreds of thousands of acres in Ethiopia, Kenya, Madagascar, Senegal, and Mozambique, where they're growing rice, sugarcane, corn, and lentils for their own domestic market back in India. This is a challenge to China and Saudi Arabia in the new scramble for Africa. China, South Korea, and several Arab countries have led the way in creating new African mega farms to outsource their domestic food production and use cheaper labor. Critics have described the development as modern piracy and land grabbing from countries that have in the past been blighted by famine and severe food shortages. More than 80 Indian companies have invested an estimated $2 billion in buying huge plantations in Ethiopia, for example. Indian farming domestically is dominated by small family-run holdings, oxcar transport, and legions of middlemen. The slow, cumbersome system is cited as the main reason why a large proportion of Indian produce rots before it ever reaches the market, at an annual loss of up to $8 to $9 billion. So Indian companies see in Africa the possibility to build more efficient and far larger agricultural operations. Yeah, it's easier than modernizing your own farming industry, isn't it? This is a separate motivation from that of many Arab countries that buy African land to produce food that their homelands cannot. Yep, their future's in their own hands, all right. Now, from McClatchy newspapers, a story about Haji Sahib Rohula Wakil, who spent some time in Guantanamo Bay, listed among a Pentagon report as among 74 former Gitmo detainees who've returned to terrorism. Pentagon officials didn't respond to a request for comment on why he was included in a report that was leaked recently. The problem is that Wakil spends his days going from one high-level official meeting to another in Afghanistan, advocating for the needs of Kunar province, his home region. His meetings with President Karzai, with Karzai's chief of staff, or with one of Afghanistan's other presidential candidates, begins with them thanking him for his honorable service to the people of Kumar. Far from being in hiding, he operates openly among officials of Afghanistan's U.S. allied government. For 6 years, he says, I was ready to go to court and defend myself. They should show the world their proof against me. I'm ready to answer any questions. The worst of the worst, ladies and gentlemen. And from the Times of London, news about what's going on in the United States. Because I don't think I've heard this in the U.S. press, in the all the talk about Sarah Palin. The Times of London reports that Republicans, not just liberals and Democrats and the media and the elites, Republicans are ticked off with her. In an article in Newsmax, a leading conservative online publication, the writer Ronald Kessler says Palin was increasingly paranoid. In contrast to the self-confidence and sunny demeanor that won over so many, Palin has become a suspicious, sulking diva. Earlier this year, she chaired a conference of state legislators in Alaska, chaired by the Republican president of the Senate, asked politely if she would like to share her plans for the upcoming legislative session. She stunned the room by complaining, I feel like you guys are always trying to put me on the spot. She's also accepted and then abruptly rejected invitations to speak at conservative dinners. Kessler writes, her biggest supporters have been appalled at her transformation. David Keene, chairman of the American Conservative Union, said scathingly last week in the period leading up to the resignation, she needed to get over the fact that people didn't like her, get over the fact that she harbored resentment for the McCain people that used her. All those things are true, but she got more out of it than they did. Joining in the attacks, Peggy Noonan, Ronald Reagan's former speechwriter, wrote in the Wall Street Journal that Republicans should stop defending her wayward behavior. Quote, she makes the party look stupid, a party of the easily manipulated. I guess it's not just the liberal elite anymore. Or maybe the liberal elite is signing up new members as we speak. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. And to sort of wrap things up, this just in. The chairman of the House Intelligence Committee accuses the CIA of lying to the panel in a classified matter. The second time in less than 2 months that a top House Democrat has charged the spy agency with intentionally misleading Congress. And the New York Times reports this weekend that the CIA was ordered not to brief Congress about a secret intelligence matter by Vice President, then Vice President Dick Cheney. This just in. Who would have guessed it? Just time for a few apologies of the week. Formula One boss Bernie Eccleston this week apologized for praising Adolf Hitler's ability to get things done. Comments which had prompted a Jewish group in Germany to call for a boycott of Formula One racing. Eccleston made the original remarks in an interview published in a newspaper. There you go again. Used an article in the same newspaper, the Sunday Times of the Times of London, to make his apology, and later issued a further statement to try to quell the furor. I unreservedly apologize for the remarks I made regarding Hitler in a recent interview. I'm extremely distressed and embarrassed that these remarks have been used as suggesting that I support Hitler. I would never support Hitler or Saddam Hussein. I should never have been so foolish as to have been drawn into discussing these people, but the fault was entirely mine, which I deeply regret. And the new foreign minister of Honduras said this week he'd apologize in writing to President Obama for a racially tinged comment he'd made about the U.S. leader that Washington's embassy in Tegucigalpa strongly condemned. Disrespectful and racially insensitive comments about Obama by the member of the de facto regime that took power there 9 days ago. The comments, he called Obama, quote, a little black man who doesn't know where Tegucigalpa is, unquote. He's sorry. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan. Around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the East Coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.45 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available on your smartphone via stitcher.com, available as a free download to members at www.audible.com/theshow. Available as a free podcast from kcrw.com. And it'll be just like me returning to the original Le Show Dome if you'd agree to join me for the event. Would you? Ernie, thank you very much. Uh-huh. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks, and to Adrian Bodenham here at Global Radio in London for making today's program possible. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The email address for this broadcast and playlist of the music heard here on, always available for you, usually, always, usually, at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from Leicester Square in London.